Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here on this kind of overcast, rainy Wednesday morning. Certainly foggy, Thursday morning here in Marion. Thursday, September 25th, 2025, 9/25/25, last Thursday in the month of October. How about that? 13 minutes past the hour, joined in studio by Frank Gibson. Economic workforce development is the topic this morning, and I do want to let people know that this program is brought to you by the Industrial Channel. We thank them for that, and phone lines are open. This is a live show right now. If you would like to call in, feel free to ask Frank a question about anything we've talked about or anything that pertains to the subject at hand. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. We will do that this hour. We can do that during our conversation or right off the top here. So when the phone call comes in, we'll get you on the line, and you can talk to Frank about what interests you. 740-383-9944. Frank, what are the best practices from other regions that we can adopt to strengthen our manufacturing workforce?
Okay, let's think about that. Some of the things that come to mind is implementing apprenticeship programs or apprentice-type programs, creating industry education partnerships. That's huge now. Investing in advanced manufacturing training centers, and promoting STEM education in early age. And for those of you that don't like acronyms, STEM is science, technology, engineering, and math. And here recently, Bursiris Schools has went down the road to create a fab lab and also start the STEM clear back into preschool and that kind of thing, and especially focus on making sure that at an early age, youth have know the career opportunities out there, not just in healthcare and construction and other various industry sectors, but manufacturing is one that comes to mind.
How can we leverage technology and innovation to enhance workforce development in manufacturing?
Great question. Innovation comes to mind in the technology that today, you look back decades ago and where we're at today, but leveraging technology and innovation can involve incorporating digital tools and platforms into training programs, using virtual reality for simulations, and adopting automation and robotics to improve efficiency. Additionally, staying updated with industry trends and, I guess, continuously investing in new technologies can drive workforce development. And that's what we're focused on nowadays is that new technology and getting our current workforce upskilled and trying to get the future workforce to at least start out with an awareness, knowledge, and understanding so they can get into the job they want to, career path they've chosen, and start to apply what they've learned on machine-specific work that's done in that business. It may be a little different than what they had their hands on learning in the career center or school that they did. But once you get in that work setting, you have to be able to operate and maintain the machinery and equipment they have.
How fast is technology moving?
Years ago, it might have been, they say, every 2 years, and then I heard 6 months, and nowadays, it's changing very rapidly, and I'd hate to put a time frame on when that is, because somebody has an idea today, they can make it happen, and it doesn't take that long. You know, it just depends on what the idea is and who they present it to and who they get to help them be able to pull that off. I'd say in manufacturing, your R&D departments, research and development, that's a key. You know, they have to keep up with a new product, new design, whatever it takes to stay competitive in the market.
Do want to let people know, 18 minutes past the hour and phone lines are open. If you do have a question you'd like to ask, feel free to call in 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. We will be glad to take your question on anything we've discussed or anything that maybe is on your mind as far as workforce development in this area goes. And looks like we're going to get our first call here. So let's go to the phone lines. Go ahead, caller.
Manufacturing.
There you go.
Hey, one thing that, you know, talking about the culture, the environment that the employer has for employees. Someone posted somewhere, and this quote is attributed to Richard Branson of Virgin Atlantic, Virgin Records, etc. I hope I can recite it properly. Train your employees so they can leave. Treat your employees so they won't leave. And that's something I think should be on the wall of every HR, CEO, so on and so forth, their walls, to remind them daily, because you know, the employees are the assets, really. They're the ones that make it possible to generate revenue for the company.
It's a good comment. And one that comes to mind is that we hear nowadays is that businesses are concerned that if they train their employees, they'll leave. And someone said, what if you don't train them and they stay? Now, you could talk about that for a while. And it's one that, what do they mean by that? Well, if they don't train them and they stay, what have they accomplished? Does that make sense? I mean, they haven't moved the needle. So they haven't even started traction towards where they need to be with this new technology and everything that's coming into play. So don't be afraid to train your people. Yeah, I agree with the statement, you know.
And Scott, if I may toot my horn here a little bit, the industrial channel. The industrial channel came about because of working with Frank and going around all of these adjacent counties and listening to people. And the industrial channel is, I would like it to be the Amazon of manufacturing. So one name, one location where people can find solutions, can find personnel, etc. And one of the areas that I would really like to build on the website is up-and-coming students graduating with certifications. I'd like to make them the rock stars of manufacturing, like Chef Gordon did with celebrity chefs. And it's sorely needed because of the end of the baby boomers and all of those skilled technicians that are retiring. A lot of those skills and things, who's going to train the newer folks coming up, hopefully filling those positions? But there are a lot of things, and I would encourage a lot of people to take the time to take a look at the industrial channel and see some of the things. We've got some great videos on there about the Tesla, Amazon, their warehousing, and the history of manufacturing. One of the first manufacturing concerns in the United States is on there. And that was passed by Congress in 1794, I believe it was. And that first industry was Harper's Ferry and the Springfield Armory. The first manufacturing, first industry in the United States. So there are a lot of things. Manufacturing is exciting, and, you know, it's really fun. The ingenious solutions people come up with. And, you know, one thing to kind of look at is do a Google search for Rube Goldberg and look at some of the contraptions that are there. It's just, you can use so much imagination and creativity to solve problems with engineering and manufacturing. Because everything, you know, what you're sitting on right now, someone had to design it, engineer, and manufacture it.
Now, how do people find the Industrial Channel?
It's as simple as the word, theindustrialchannel.com.
All right.
Theindustrialchannel.com.
Sounds great. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
All right. And again, phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. If you have any questions, feel free to buzz in. 24 minutes past the hour here, 740-383-9944. What unique challenges do small manufacturers face in our region?
Improving collaboration, and that can be achieved through regular communication and partnership initiatives. Those kind of things. Small manufacturers often struggle with limited resources, both in terms of finances and workforce. They may find it very challenging to compete with larger companies for skilled labor and may lack the capital to invest in advanced technologies. Those are a few of the things that come to mind. You go into manufacturing, you talk to the lead person, whether that's called general manager, CEO, president, and they say, we want to buy a piece of equipment to increase our capacity, but Frank, we don't have the skilled labor to do that. So that's what I hate to hear. You know, it's if they want to be in a growth mode, let's help them in some way accomplish what it is they need.
How can small manufacturers compete with larger companies in terms of workforce development?
Again, this sounds repetitive, but small manufacturers, they can focus on creating a positive workplace culture. They can offer flexible work schedules. They provide opportunities for career advancement. As long as the person can see that they've got a place to grow in that organization, then that's helped them grow. They can collaborate with local educational institutions and create tailored programs. That's what we call customized training, that meet their specific needs. So those are some of the things that we can do to help small manufacturers, and that's what we can do. Their focus is to grow. What is it? We have to ask the questions to try to find out what their specific needs are and then help them with that.
And I think a very important question is what support do small manufacturers need from local government and community organizations to thrive?
Small manufacturers, it might be that they could use some financial incentives, such as subsidies for capital investment and training programs. They may also benefit from streamlined regulatory processes, and I think we mentioned that before, and support in navigating the complexities of compliance and permits. So those are some big ones that we can do to help them.
And again, I do want to remind people, if you want to get in on the conversation, the phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Call in. Anything that's on your mind, no bad questions at all. If it has anything to do with anything we've talked about in the last 90 minutes, you can bring it up, or anything that is on your mind in general. 740-383-9944. Local government, is local government equipped for the most part to help organizations survive and thrive?
Good question. Again, I look at leadership within a county or region. If they've got a focus on bringing new organizations in, but they don't have a focus on business retention and expansion, then they're missing that. So government involvement in that is working closely with economic development and those that are trying to attract and retain the businesses. And that's one of the things I believe. It's just like a business. I remember a discussion with a gentleman. He says, Frank, I want to grow the business. And I said, well, have you went back to your existing customers to find out if they need something else? He says, oh, I didn't even think about that. So he went back and he started talking to them. And pretty soon, a month later or so, how are you doing? He says, a lot of new contracts. So it's the same way with government taking a look at what do we have existing? What businesses do we have existing and what can we do to help them? And asking the right questions. It's like, what's holding you back from growth? What can we do to help? And then following through with that. And that way you build that trust and you got a community that's growing.
You know, here in the 80s, in Marion at least, we saw a lot of upheaval, certainly with the Tecumseh plant locally here and what they went through, and that made the Columbus news, and through union strikes and kind of violent union strikes at some point, Tecumseh left, and other people have left. Now, we have gotten other people in manufacturing positions, but what impact did that visual and that era, the loss of the shovel happened in the 80s as well, which was a big part of Marion's identity, really. That decade and those losses, how did that impact what's happened in the last 30 to 40 years?
I say the impact is if you learn from what's happened in the past, then you can go forward in the future. You can go around to different communities. And I think it was Westinghouse in Mansfield, and you go through one of their vacant buildings at that point in time. And then most recent is like the GM closing there in Mansfield. And then the steel plant almost closing, but they went to a mini mill instead of a larger one. And what we learn is that we need to make sure that we have a very diverse types of businesses that come in, whether that's manufacturing or whatever. And if we do that, I know there was a concentration. Everybody was trying to get the big one. So if we lose the big one, how does that hurt the community? So if we haven't learned our lesson, then one of them is that we don't really want just one huge company. We got what if we get several with 100 employees or 200 employees with an opportunity to grow? And then can we help them with that? So I think lessons learned is back in that era, it was hard to see, big plants close like that. But I think that what we've learned from that is to make sure we don't put our eggs all in one basket.
You know what's interesting? I heard somebody in local government once say of the big shovel plant that we have here in Marion, that once that was vacated, and it's been used for different things over the years, but not the whole plant, but once it was vacated and people saw it as an empty building, that just the building alone was a detriment to the community because it reminded people of what we once had. And so many people lived, worked their entire careers in that business. So just being reminded by the building still being there, a building of such size, was problematic. Perception.
Yeah. It is. You can go through communities, HPM Manufacturing in Mount Gilead, Ohio, or you go into Kenton and you see one of the closures of something similar to Temkin or whatever, and you see those empty buildings. And yes, there's history there, but now they become an eyesore. And what they've done in government is they call those brownfield sites. And what they try to do is offer subsidies to help clean those up. And if you can renovate, fine, but if you can't, you get demolition. And there's dollars out there for demolition of empty buildings and things like that. So there's a lot of focus on trying to help clean up that. But also, you know, what do you leave, a plaque or something that says this is the historic site of so-and-so? Is that enough? You know, it's like it's a good question as far as what do people think.
Go ahead, caller.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
You've got a big job on your hands doing what you're doing right now. Questions, you know what?
What's that now?
I say you've got a big job on your hands right now answering questions. That's a big job to answer questions that sewed up from old manufacturing into the new facilities of today.
Yes.
Because there's no way you can compare those facilities. I was a young man, like all of us, men and women. We entered some of the old factories, excuse me, and we were told, I was told, being a male, that the older guys, they knew of me, and they would talk, and that every one of them say, hey, if there's any way you can get a chance to get out of here, get out of here. And I worked at the first big manufacturer I worked for was Marion Power Shovel, and excuse me, and you know what? I heeded that advice, and I got out when I had the opportunity. So I went from the Marion Power Shovel and went to the Erie Railroad. What a big jump in different working conditions, you know, and so. They were both union also, and I don't know, what is your opinion of union manufacturing or working today with young people and stuff today? I'm talking about starting today, the young people, like if we, all of us right here in the trio talking, that if we was 16 again, going back, it's a lot different, wouldn't you say, that... The bigger facilities, like you just mentioned a while ago, I think would be better if they had them down to not as many employees as a bunch and have them scattered out maybe in a area that you wouldn't have that 500-car traffic rush going down the streets in one town and stuff like that. That's a big big downfall, you know, and people, am I going to make it to work on time? And if you didn't, well, you get... you'd get, you know, told about it and stuff. But that's what they always said about Marion when Whirlpool coming here. Who in the name of God ever thought of the one-way streets? Well, I'll tell you one thing my opinion was when Whirlpool come here. I've lived here all my life, Mr. Gibson. And if you didn't have that, the factory the facility would not be able to operate because they operate with like 100-150 people on one line. They have three lines going, you know, that's a lot of people, and you can't have streets making people late for work. But I always skip off of the thing there that I did hire in on a job, and they said, we're going to tell you what to do, when to do it, and how to do it, so don't worry about not knowing the skilled part of doing it. We'll teach you that. But they said, you know, Ted, the thing that brought to mind that I have no trouble hiring you, and I said, what's that, sir? And he said, we've looked back in your school record, this school record, not grades, just attendance. And they said, you have never missed a day of school. And they said, that's what we want in our manufacturing, our businesses and stuff. We want the people to be there on time, because we got a business to run, and then we'll teach you that. I don't think it's that hard to get so-called skilled people in working. Do you, Mr. Gibson?
It's one that you got to weed through, get through the weeds, and you pick the choice of who you're going to bring into your organization.
Well, the weeds don't bother too much, but you got to be on time there to take the sickle and cut them down so you can get down on time and stuff like that. That's the big thing, and do your work and do it. And another thing, do you think, like, bigger factories and stuff, people get bored and they get the Carpal Tunnel and stuff like that in their reputation all the time, doing the same thing for 25 years or something like that? Do you think sometimes it would be more attractive to people in any kind of a business if there could be a rotation in that? Because if you graduated from high school or even went to college and graduated, you're talking about skills. I think you'd have the ability to have skills unless you had a physical defect or something and couldn't maybe with your one hand or something like that in some areas. But don't you think a rotation in the jobs instead of the one thing, and that's the only job you'd ever have? And one other question, I don't believe in these factories and stuff or any place else hiring you and everybody else making $20 an hour and you go in there making $15 an hour for maybe 3 or 4 years before you get top wages. There's another big drawback on some of the people that's looking for jobs and stuff, not to have. There's always holdbacks, and education isn't that great, I don't think, in today's age is holdback. And then I don't know if they just never been brought up in child life to have any responsibilities or have any duties at home. You mentioned your age there. Well, I got your age. You said 58, so you're no spring chicken either, and went in school, so you had 17 years onto that. I don't know. How old are you? Did I guess that right? You said 58 years working?
Next month, three-quarters of a century.
Three-quarters of a century. Well, you know what? I got you beat a little bit. So I've been retired 22 years. And I worked 20 years at the railroad and 20 years at Whirlpool, and I've been retired for 22 years, so you can still do the math. I've been around a while and worked at two car manufacturer or sales, Danner Buick and Short Ford, and they were pretty interesting jobs but didn't make much money compared to the factories. But if we can get more factories but not huge things and still produce the same thing in smaller areas, I think it'd be a good thing in this country. Thank you.
All right. Frank, what do you think? A lot of stuff there.
There's a lot of insight. Sounds familiar. You know, it's making that transition from one business to another. But what I was thinking was transferable skills. And it's like somebody says, okay, you got a youth that's been in retail, fast food, or any other various things. How does that relate to manufacturing experience? And I say again, one of the big things is if we can teach customer service, that's all around. You know, it's well-rounded. And those are transferable skills into any types of business. So if anything, let's get the youth at a young age into those jobs. And like I mentioned before, you got a 12 or 13-year-old in a restaurant operation or a fast food facility, and they get the training. If they learn that customer service, they can take that anywhere. And it's amazing the people that are in positions in manufacturing now that said, hey, that's where I got my start. And they done a good job of teaching me different things, leadership skills and things like that. But, you know, there was a lot of questions and a lot of comments in the last caller there. And you almost have to have a recording and play them back and try to figure out what that is.
Well, I do want to let people know we've got about 16 minutes left in the broadcast here with Frank, and if you have a question that you've been wanting to ask, feel free. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. This program today is brought to you by the Industrial Channel, and we thank them for that. Again, the phone lines are open. 740-383-9944. All right, here, let's take this call. Go ahead.
Oh, love manufacturing. You know, some of the things, maybe a hurdle, has to do with HR or hiring people that aren't necessarily well-equipped to be in that position. It seems like anymore, say the past 10 or more years, people want the silver bullet solution when they hire someone. They put down all of these specifications and they scan everything and they kick it out and then whatever program they use. But I think the human factor of can this person grow into this position? Because if they hire somebody that meets all of their criteria, they might just be hiring somebody that will soon become bored with the job and move on. So something to maybe think about.
Thank you.
That's it. Thanks.
All right. And again, phone lines are open. 740-383-9944. 15 minutes left in the program. Frank Gibson is the guest here. And again, the Industrial Channel brings you this program this morning, 740-383-9944, if you have any questions on anything. Now, how can small manufacturers attract and retain skilled workers?
That would be offering competitive wage and benefits, creating a supportive and inclusive workplace culture, providing opportunities for professional development and training. Those are a few key strategies for attracting and retaining skilled workers. Again, though, you know, the individual makes that decision by what they're interested in, or, you know, some just flexibility in hours or maybe only working a couple of days a week. You don't know nowadays and how to do that, but you've got to figure what is it that excites that person and how do you keep them.
Mm. Well, what's the best way to do that? Do you have a conversation with them? Do you talk to people in the community? What are the wants and needs there? What's the best way to figure out what people want?
Discussion, communication, and it's not just once they get their foot in the door, who are they gonna be working with? Who's gonna bring them up through learning what they're doing? And those individuals have to be positive about where they're working, and they know what it is they have to teach the worker. The supervisors come into play, and are they learning about this person, or are they throwing that off on somebody else? And it's one of those that, like safety, everybody's responsible for that. Quality, everybody's responsible for that. Training that new person and trying to figure out how to retain them, that's everybody's responsibility. It can't be just point the finger and say, this is who it is, you know. So turnover is a big one, and you got to find out what's causing the turnover. So if you get to that point, then you're going to retain more workers.
I know this is a big question right now. What role can small manufacturers play in local economic development?
Small manufacturers contribute a lot. One of the things is creating jobs. And you may think, well, we can get a company in and automatically you get 200 new jobs. But if you take out of the 635 manufacturers in the region, and over 80% of those are 100 employees or less, and I'd say probably 50% of that 80% is probably 10 employees or less. So if you get each one of those businesses to add one person, you got 635 jobs. So it's creating jobs, supporting local, you know, local supply chains. That's small manufacturers do that. And fostering innovation. Sometimes they have to be creative and innovative in the products and services they offer. And they got to figure a way to make that customer happy. So small businesses and growth is a key. What can we do to help them grow?
Let's go back to the phones here. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, earlier, Frank, I heard you say that they like to hire people skilled people and stuff, and maintain their own equipment too. That's kind of a reverse in working. They usually have people that maintain the equipment and then people that run the equipment. But could you explain that a little bit more? And whereabouts do they have 12 and 13-year-old people working at a place, fast food places? Do we have that in Marion, sir?
I can't answer that, but in each of the counties or each of the communities as far as the 12 and 13-year-olds, but my guess is that if they've got that work permit signed by the parent, that it's up to the parents and the kids on where they're going to work. As far as the you mentioned, it's changed a little bit. You had people that operate machines. You had people that maintain the machines. Today, with the automation and robotics and different things, they want a worker that can operate the equipment and do basic maintenance and stuff on that. And they determine what that is, because if they got a new piece of equipment, they got to watch out for the warranties and what they can do and what they can't do.
So that would increase the wages of that particular job then, wouldn't it?
Yes.
They're more or less, this day and age, they're doing two people's jobs to make one person's living. And another thing is, in today's world, when I was born in 41, my brother in 31, my dad and we had my sister and stuff, four of us on the family. My dad was a molder at Commercial Steel for 48 years. And my mother never worked, stay-at-home moms and all that stuff. But, you know, it's kind of going back that way. A lot of people aren't getting married and they aren't raising children, but they can't live on one wage. So that's a big factor, too, today than what it used to be. It's two people in the family and sometimes three, four in the family, because the kids don't leave home till they're 30, 35 and get married or something, some reason, and they all have income so they can live in a city or town or whatever with the inflation going up on it. So that has a big factor in it, regardless of the skilled employers, do you think?
There's a lot of questions in the comments. And
well, there's a lot. One question is, I went through the era of one person working, and in the era of four people in the family working, you know, the taxes are for the one person working, and the affordable living and stuff like that is way out of reason, you know. So, and then the college education. I've had the grandkids, all of them go through college and stuff, and everything, and the prices and stuff. But grandma and grandpa helped on that, you know, that grandma and grandpa didn't have to go to college. My wife went right into a job, and I went right into a job that was probably the best jobs in Marion. At the time, we didn't have to go to college, but when opportunity knocks, sometimes there should be the jobs where you don't have to worry about all the skill and all the things there is. They're out there, but I don't know. I didn't heed too much out of all the conversation that you was talking about. There was a lot of your competition that I couldn't heed of what's going on in trying to make manufacturing better and more people can rely on their job to pay the bills. Thank you.
Well, I guess I think the main question there was, can manufacturing pay the bills?
Yeah. Living wage, that's the what they call it nowadays. And, you know, you think back even in our era, how many incomes did it take in order to have the house and have a car and have children? You know, it was more than one. Our parents, you know, might have, the mom stayed at home and dad was the breadwinner, but dad might have had three jobs in order to bring the income in to support us. So I don't see much changing in that either. It's according to what your needs and wants are. You know, each individual makes up their mind what it is they want to do and what they want. They can choose the job. They don't have to take a job. So they can choose the job they want. And today, it's more of a labor market than it is a business saying we've got enough labor. You know, so it's an overabundance. Supply and demand is in favor of labor today. So you can pick and choose where you go. But find that one that's you got a living wage. But also, you have to pay your dues, too, as an individual. And you got to continue learning, learn and unlearn.
Do want to let people know we've got about 5 minutes left in the broadcast here today. The phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. So if you've had a question, now would be the time with about 5 minutes left to go. Frank Gibson is the guest, and the Industrial Channel has been the sponsor of this program this morning. We certainly appreciate that. But the phone number again, 740-383-9944. We said we take phone calls, and we certainly have done that. What are the latest technological advancements that can benefit the manufacturing workforce?
Latest technical advances in automation, robotics, artificial intelligence, Internet of Things come to mind. They supposedly significantly enhance productivity, efficiency, and safety in manufacturing operations. And sometimes you get on the conversation of AI with businesses and artificial intelligence, and are they embracing it? Are they rapidly moving into that era? Or what's holding them back from moving into that? The biggest one is proprietary information that if they use what's out there AI-wise, is it going to be secure? Is somebody else going to be able to come in and reinvent what they've done? So those are some of the big ones in what's happening out there now.
You know, AI is interesting. I heard a statistic recently that AI is going to hurt white-collar jobs more than it's going to hurt blue-collar jobs. And I don't think anybody in the last 30 to 40 years who was preaching about college and preaching about, you know, work in a bank, work in a school, work in an office setting ever thought that something would come along that would take their job. it was always technology is going to eliminate the factory worker. It's going to eliminate the industrial worker. But now they say it's the white-collar people who are in danger because of AI.
That's a good thought, and had many conversations with a variety of people on how they feel about AI. And yesterday in a meeting is, you know, that if you get your C-suite people that are making the decisions for everybody, then what if AI replaced them? It's like you invert it. You know, who's of value? And of value right now in manufacturing is frontline workers. They need the frontline workers to produce the parts and make sure that the capacity is up where it needs to be to grow, where the utilization of machinery and equipment. And if they do that right, the speed at which they can stay competitive is velocity is what the term's being used. Those kind of things come to mind, but do you invert the pyramid in a sense? If you had executive level at the top and you work your way down to the frontline worker, who's of most value? And then what if you invert that? And the skilled labor frontline worker is of most value, and the executive level is being replaced by AI. Think about that. That'd be a good conversation to have with people.
It absolutely would. We're down to the last minute. Time flew right by. I want to let people know that Voice of the People with Linda Sims comes up after we go off today, 10:15 a.m. until 12 noon, and Adam the Computer Guy from 12:15 to 1. Do want to remind everybody this program was sponsored, brought to you by the Industrial Channel. We thank them for doing that. Thank Frank for coming in today, taking the phone calls certainly educating us on a lot of things that are very important in workforce development, and I'm sure the conversation will continue because I think it's a conversation that people definitely want to have. So, Frank, with about 20 seconds left to go, what's the most important thing people should know about workforce development right now?
Yeah, workforce development is a component of a well-planned economic and community development. Workforce development in your community being led by economic development that is largely made up of business, which I call shareholders? And if yes, what are some of the key points that are in the economic development strategy? So think about that. Maybe that we can carry on another conversation.
Absolutely. Frank Gibson was the guest, and we certainly appreciate it. For this day, Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
So it was pretty much ended up sounding the same. I'll tell you one quick story. My wife and I were having dinner in a restaurant, and my wife said something funny, and I laughed, and the laugh was, you know, which was pretty much my bozo laugh, and my wife said, "You're not going to believe this, but three kids just stood on their chairs and started looking around."
I love it.
But no, the bozo voice was right about here. And it was a lot more adenoidal than mine. And that was pretty much it. You know, of course, we had the standard, "Hey, that's me!" Which I did as a more of a yell, war cry than a yell.
And the grand prize game. Oh, my goodness. How could we ever forget that?
Yeah. I would drive.